The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
The part where you say good morning.
Oh, that's right. Good morning, ready?
Ha, you have joined We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And we have the Listen Live button up there that should connect you with the chat room. We've been having a little challenge with the chat room of late. Hopefully today, I don't know yet if it's going to work.
If I sound a little dreamier
than usual, it's because I have a face made for radio today. Suffered a little dog bite a couple days ago. Taking a lot of pain medication.
She's been a lot of fun.
It makes me a little, yeah.
Was it your dog?
Yeah. You're supposed to say, does your dog bay?
Does your dog bay?
Come on, there's so much good material for this.
That's how she said, your dog does not bite.
Dog does not bite. It's not my dog. It was Bill's dog.
All the words
I want to say about the dog are unfit for radio.
I've not been allowed to joke about the dog, so thank you, Bob.
You've been allowed to joke about the dog. I talked about, Bill asked me what I wanted for dinner. I told him I wanted soup made out of the dog.
Made out of the dog.
Oh, my God. Right in the bridge of my nose, right where my glasses go, you know? We had a whole bunch of his teeth pulled out, too.
It's a good thing.
Left the canines. Blow it. Yeah. Should have taken the rest. Oh, that's good. We have George Soros in the chat room. My day is complete.
Just to be clear, you had his teeth pulled out before he bit you?
Yeah. Oh. You know, because he had bad teeth. Mm. Obviously, he had bad teeth. He had teeth that were itching for my face. I was just petting him, too. It was really nothing all that exciting, you know. It didn't scare him. He wasn't falling off a building. Mm. I didn't.
He had a bad day. He had a lot worse day after he bit you. He rounded it out.
Oh, my God. Nothing like that. Hey, but you know, you haven't lived until you've been to your emergency room at, you know, 11:30 at night. You get to meet so many interesting people.
Oh, yeah.
They actually felt sorry for us, and they let us sit in a different waiting room. They said, after we went into, like, triage, you know, where you answer the same questions again, they said, you might be more comfortable in here. And it said waiting room, but there was no one in it.
And later the comment was made that we were...
She
normal
goes, God,
people.
It's so great I got the normal people. By then, the blood was done running down my face, and, you know, I'm usually in pretty good humor even when I am bleeding from the nose.
It was an experience. We got to meet
that I'd
all
like
kinds.
Not to have again.
Well, I wouldn't say we got to meet them, but we did get to mingle.
Oh, and then we got out, and there were massive gunshots over on Placer, I guess. There's some big, like, gunfight over there.
Yes, about 2 in the morning a couple of nights ago.
It was actually at 2:40 because we were leaving the emergency room at 2:50. And the guy said, whoa, you just missed the big gunfight. It's like, oh, my God, get me in the car. Let's go home.
That was exciting.
It was not awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't jump in the car and go to Walmart at that point?
Yeah, no.
That's the best time of day, you know.
No, after they give you shots in the bridge of your nose, yeah, not on my list.
You're going home.
Yeah, not on my list. So, okay.
She had kind of a Klingon thing going there for
I did
a while.
Too.
It was very interesting.
I still have a Klingon thing going.
I was trying to teach her a little Klingon, but she wasn't in the mood.
I really wasn't. So, let's see. If you're going to call us today, which at this point might seem dangerous, we'll give you the phone number because we'll probably forget the rest of the time. But, hey, you know, you never can tell. We're kind of random there. It's 530-605-4567. And if you join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, I will be seeing the webpage for the first time right now because I couldn't check it earlier because, well, I couldn't see because I couldn't wear my glasses, you know. Hey, so far so good. And our guest said he sent us another PowerPoint, so we'll be replacing the PowerPoint. So at some point you might want to refresh your page, and that'll give you the new one. But we've got two guests today, and we're talking about Endangered Species Act stuff and Environmental Protection Agency and that sort of thing. And it's a two-week, we've got a little two-week plan for you.
Two-parter.
Yeah, two-parter. But we have Dr. Michael Kaufman on the second hour, and we have Rick Frost on the first hour. Then Rick Frost will be back with us next week. So if you feel like we ran out of time this hour, we're good, because we'll have next week to tidy up, you know. And he's got a really wide base of information. Let's see, he's listed as a natural resources consultant. That's good and comprehensive. I like it. And he's a specialist on policy and regulatory issues, and God knows we need lots of those on our side, you know, the people who still have common sense left and actually can read the law and know what it really means. So he's got all sorts of good information on the Wildlands Project, and you know, you hear about these conservation easements all the time, and a lot of our farmers and ranchers are being strong-armed to put their property in conservation easements in order to hold on to them. We'll be talking about how that really works out and what that's all part of. Do we have to take a really quick break before we start with him, or did we already do that since I can't see the clock?
How many fingers?
We have him on the line if you'd like to say good morning to him.
Oh,
at least.
Hi.
No.
Mr. Frost, are you hiding in there?
Oh, good morning, everybody.
Hello.
Good morning.
Well,
on your side of the hill.
What?
How's the weather on your side of the hill?
I don't know. I've mostly been looking at the inside of my eyelids, so.
It's sunny and warm, and lots of fake clouds out there this morning.
Lots of fake clouds. What's that?
Oh, what, but to answer your first question, yes, we do need to take a break.
Okay. See, Bob can't send me smoke signals because I have my glasses down at the end of my nose, and I can only see what I'm exactly looking at down the end of my nose.
You're going for the Ben Franklin look.
Yeah, I am. I am, to eliminate the puffiness. Okay, so we'll take the balance of our really quick break. Then we're going to come back, and we're going to...
What did I ask you when you came in the front door?
You said, how was your trip to Lake Tahoe?
Right.
I said it was fine until I got home.
And you said you had an issue, and I looked at your face, and I said, oh, your allergies acting up?
Yeah, your allergies acting up. Yeah, my allergies came with a big...
Yeah, you should give everybody the visual.
My allergies came with a canine this time.
We have very slitty eyes. Actually, they're much better than they were before. It looks like maybe I'm an abuser, but I swear it wasn't me.
But I told Bill if he isn't good, I'll go to church today.
I know, and
looks sad.
I'm not allowing her out in public, because I know I'm
sad.
In for it. So.
All right, hit
Turns
the button.
Out she's allergic to dog bites.
Yes,
I am allergic to dog bites. I'm allergic to bleeding from the face. And all those movies, they're totally fake. Those guys, they get stabbed in the face and they keep running. Yeah, that's a huge lie. Giant lie. All right, we're going to come back with you in just, I don't know, some short period of time. And
Just hang in there, Mr. Frost, and we will be right back.
Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll check out the chat room.
But good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
May the bird of paradise fly up your nose. May an elephant caress you with his toes. May your wife be black as the runners in her hose.
The bird of paradise couldn't fit up my nose.
I have a feeling Bob's going to have fun today.
Only the nose knows.
Ay, ay, ay.
God. Yeah, we had, let's see, who let the dogs out. We've got a lot going on in the chat room. Today it'd be worth plugging in on the chat room. Okay, so now we've determined that's the last time I yell, bite me.
Not something you want to say to a dog.
Nah, Mr. Frost, honestly, bring us down, make us sad. Talk about I don't know, any of the things that are on your list.
Oh, I see it. I'm the downer of the show.
Oh, no.
Your resume's too long to read. At the end of the day, these guys have all gone crazy, and we kind of already know that. And their plan is to ruin our lives.
Yeah. No, short story, I spent about 15 years as an economic and environmental policy analyst at the university. And my job was to evaluate impacts from environment programs and lawsuits, the impacts that would result in economic, cultural, and social type structures. And one of the things that we uncovered way back in the 90s was this plan to basically convert all the open raw lands that were pretty much farm and ranch lands of the West into a connected corridor program. I was totally unaware of Dr. Kaufman at the time, and so this was a study that we did independent of everybody else. And it turned out to be what most folks know today as the Wildlands Project. The Wildlands Project was conceived by Reed Noss and Dave Foreman and one other person, I think it's Michael Soule, I think. Anyhow, they conceived of this plan, and I attended the first flagship meeting of the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. And in there, they explain the plan on how they're going to connect corridors of private land to the national parks and the forests and other open areas and eventually regulate people's use off those lands so that they could go back to being totally wild. I did download a small PowerPoint or segments of PowerPoints that I have presented in the past. On this issue. One of them is a picture of the actual original map. I think it's about the sixth slide in. In there, that is a picture that they posted in May of 1999 where they were showing right there against the Arizona and New Mexico border. There's some wildlands down there. In fact, the very first wilderness declared in the United States is the Gila Wilderness, and it's right up against the western New Mexico border. That is the large block of land at the top with that squared edge. That squared edge is the New Mexico-Arizona border. Anyhow, on it, they had identified ranches that they wanted for connections, and those were identified by the Orange Arrows. And they were talking about how they were going to use conservation easements to sell the idea to these people to set their properties aside that would never be developed. What they don't know is the fine points of conservation easements is that they allow habitat restrictions to be imposed at some point into the future. And this was craftily designed into conservation easements with the intent of at some point shutting the people off.
Well, and the reason this, I mean, okay, just for people that are like, what are they talking about? Go to the webpage, wethepeopleradio.us, a tiny way down just under Rick Frost's picture. It says, click to launch PowerPoint on Wildlands Project, and then it also says, or click to view our slideshow. My guess is Robert put it in there two different ways in case you didn't have a program to open it. If you're just listening while you're driving or something, when you go home, click on this thing because this is 1995 National Wilderness Institute with a howling wolf on it, classic as the logo. But it shows the state. Hold on here, let me be accurate. It shows all the land managed by the state and the federal government, and it's broken down into all the little tiny sections, state parks, wildlife refuge, state forest, BLM, USDA, National Park Service, Army Corps. And I think sometimes we don't realize how many different people we have with their mitts on our land, I guess, if you will. So go there. That's what we're talking about. Party on, Garth.
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, look, going to that very first slide that you mentioned that was produced by the National Wilderness Institute, that map actually captures the big problem of ideology in our land regulations here in the United States. As you'll notice, right down the center going towards the east, the largely Everything is held in private property, which is all white, and everything to the west of center is largely held by some government function, some government agency. That line down the center is what's known as the 100th meridian, and what happened was back in 1845 with the Mexican-American War that was resolved in 1846, that is the dividing line defined by the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo and Kearney's Code. Because what happened is that all of the lands in the west were pretty much under Spanish or Mexican rule. And with the War of 1845, we had a lot of Mexican residents that now, through no fault of their own, were suddenly American residents. But their rule of law when it came to land and forage and water and natural resources is different than the English system. The Spaniards, the Mexican rule, has what's known as beneficial use and prior appropriation. And these people wanted that structure to be left in place because the English system is known as riparian law, and it has huge structural differences than the Spanish prior appropriation law. So the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was passed to ensure that all the lands of the West remain under Spanish prior appropriation. That becomes a headache for the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., and those that want to extend English riparian benefits onto Western lands, because private property is the dominant sole structure of Spanish prior appropriation that is precedent to government lands. And that has all kinds of implications and such. And that has basically been the heart of the fight for water and endangered species issues and this wildlands issue. Because even Dave Foreman himself, Dave Foreman, if you all may know, is the founder of the philosophy of Earth First, which became a movement that was running all over the West, especially the Northwest, tearing up any equipment and business enterprises based on natural resource economics. Dave Foreman is one of the three founders of the Wildlands Project concept, along with Reed Noss and Michael Soule. And Dave Foreman was also on the board of directors for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and was for quite some time. So he's even been quoted in his work that the conservation easements are at the core of what is needed at the Wildlands Project, because this is the only way that they can voluntarily get people to sign over their property rights to a land trust or another entity and basically give away the farm, give away all of the business collateral, give away all of the control of the land. Now, they tell people, well, we're doing this to protect agriculture, when in reality they're doing it to create more open spaces and to take agriculture out of production. And there's a few slides that I have included in my PowerPoint where Dave Foreman himself is quoted in different literatures where he's describing that these conservation easements are at the core of the Wildlands Project, because they want people to go under the illusion, oh yes, we're going to protect your estate, we're going to give you tax incentives to turn your lands over to us voluntarily so that your inheritance doesn't diminish. This always stays in agriculture, and then the unknowing heirs and other purchasers of the land down the road, they're not aware of these restrictions that have been imposed on there.
So when you say take the land out of agricultural production, how do they turn around then and justify that?
They justify this by saying that the wildlands, these animals inside the wildlands, they need to be reconnected so that they can wander freely back and forth. And it's basically an anti-human philosophy. Under the wildlands, they want to get rid of the roads, they want to get rid of the plowed lands, they want to get rid of any signature of human presence whatsoever, whether it be a mine, a ranch, a farm, even towns, even rural communities. They have plans to go in there and basically bulldoze them and yank out the concrete once the towns have been economically knocked off the map, so to speak.
And so then once we have all this ag land turned back to nature so the animals can roam free, where do they think our food's going to come from?
They don't really think about that. That would require, like, actual logic.
Well, part of their philosophy is that humans are seen as a bacteria on the earth.
Mm.
And so part of this wildlands philosophy is to force humans into little islands of occupation where we can function, but this also includes a massive reduction in the population. If you get further into their literature, you will find that they see that this planet should not have more than 7 billion people total. And we are well past that point. So they're actually seeing that the population over time is going to be severely reduced from what it currently is today. And so, therefore, if you reduce the amount of mouths to feed, you're going to, in their mind, and, of course, anyone else's mind, reduce the amount of food that's needed to feed these people.
Hmm. Well, that totally makes sense now. I understand.
Hey, yeah. So
we're just a scourge on the planet. We need to get back in check.
One concept
I've always had on that line is that, if you folks really and truly believe that humans are the problem, please establish precedent, establish the rules, set the way, and lead the way out first, please, by all means.
Well, even at that wolf listing meeting, the California endangered. I'm going jumble. You know what do you call it? The Fish and Game Commission. Thanks for helping me, guys.
Yeah.
Just tie another brick to my foot. I'll swim just fine. Phil's looking at me like,
I don't know.
Stop looking at me.
With one eye.
Stop it. The Wolf Commission, and a girl got up there, and she was, I don't know, mid-20s, not much older than that. And she, I wish I had it on tape or something, but she actually said that she's just praying that they list the wolf because it's time that we stopped considering man as the most important thing. It's time we got our priorities in order. Like, what?
Excuse me?
Yeah. So, I mean, and she's a college student, of course, at a school I used to attend over there, Humboldt State, and that I do not contribute to as an alumni, because they've obviously gone insane. So, yeah, that's what they're learning over there and promoting. Fabulous.
Yeah, I think they're smoking too much of their own crop over there.
Exactly.
Agriculture over there is alive and well.
Well, you know, when you think people are the problem and you need to get rid of a bunch of them, I think we've had a lot of leaders over time that have done that. Let's see. We have time to contemplate, actually. Bob's giving me the high sign. He has to give it to me low so I can see it. But I did see it. Be right back with you in 2 minutes. Sorry, little scramble we're having this morning. We'll continue. Thank God for Rick. Only sensible person in here.
KCNR 1460. We'll be right back.
You got the change, baby. And every word that I say is true. You got me running and hiding all over town. You got me sneaking and peeping and running me down. This can't go on. Lord knows you got to change.
Bob plays these songs just to make us angry.
To get our blood flowing.
Exactly.
All right.
So,
back with Rick Frost.
Getting back to the whole land trust issue, Rick, let's talk a little bit more about the downside to that whole thing. Because I know there's a lot of people out there that think the land trust issue is the way to go. I mean, it just makes so much more sense.
Well, the problem with land trust is, number one, they are a nonprofit, which, of course, anybody can be. They do their P's and Q's rights. But what they do is that they basically take control of the land by having either the conservation easement, which is the development rights, the collateral in the land, purchase or acquire control of these development rights away from the landowner. And so, therefore, any project that goes forward has to get approval of the land trust. And these are voluntary agreements that the landowners are talked into. So if a landowner wants to try to do a range improvement or a farm improvement, something like that, or even a building improvement to their agricultural buildings, they have to go before this land trust to get permission. If they don't agree with it, they've got no recourse. If they try to take them to court, for example, to fight this disagreement, then not only can the judge turn around and sit there and look, well, you signed this voluntary condition of restriction on your property, on your business, in essence, and so therefore you voluntarily accepted the terms and conditions. And, oh, by the way, in the fine print of that conservation easement you signed, it says that if the land trust has to go to court on your property for any reason, including you, then you, the landowner, have to pay for all of the land trust court costs, even if you win in court.
That's sweet.
And so there's some little hidden things in there that people just don't understand when it comes to those things. And also what happens is that these non-profit, non-tax-paying entities are taking productive lands out of the economy. And so it reduces the amount of natural resource economics that comes from land. The other burden that happens is called, where they basically impose the burden of non-taxable land onto those that have taxable land. It's called a disproportionate burden. What I mean by that is that as a community grows, you're going to have infrastructure needs. You're going to have schools, you're going to have police, fire, sewer lines, water lines, roads. All these infrastructure things that support communities are paid for with property taxes. Now, if you start taking lands out of production and imposing artificial restrictions on them by, one, taking the development value away from the land and the collateral away from the land, and you're giving it to an entity that produces no property taxes because they're tax exempt, well, as the infrastructure needs increase, all those taxable entities that are not impugned with this regulatory burden, they pick up the difference. And so the surrounding property owners get to pick up the difference that is not covered by the land that has imposed restrictions.
Well, you know, Rick, to give you an example, I have a relative that worked for a division of California Fish and Game that their job was to go out and purchase land under the wetlands conservation issue, and they would actually go out to landowners, offer them above market value price for that land because it was state money and they could
sure.
do that.
They have our checkbook using our tax
right.
dollars.
Right, and the first thing with that is the surrounding landowners never had an opportunity to buy that land because it wasn't for sale. But they come in, they offer the landowner a sweet price on the land. He'd be an idiot not to take it. And so he sells the land. Now, he's allowed to continue, at least for now, to grow his crop, and in many of the cases it was rice land. But then once that rice crop came off, that was turned over and managed by these conservation groups. And the first thing they did was they put up no trespassing signs, so the public did not have access to that land, which we paid for. The second thing is exactly what you're talking about. That land is actually owned now by the state of California, managed by the environmental group, and it's off the tax rolls. So that tax money now has to be made up somewhere, and where do you think that's going to come from? So that whole program, and that's been going on for, I mean, years and years, if not decades.
Start?
Oh, it's started...
No, I bet Rick actually knows. When did they start doing that?
What, conservation easements?
Yeah.
They've been around since the colonial days.
Well, these weren't actually easements. They actually bought the land. I mean, the state of California owns that land now.
Yeah, but and what happened is that there was a time back, there's the Conservation Easement Act that was, it was a national act, and I'd have to go back and look, but it was something passed, I'm going to say back in the 70s, and this was done by the Land Trust Alliance. And what the Land Trust Alliance did, this was at a meeting, I believe it was in New Orleans at the time, they took this Conservation Easement Act, and they went state by state with their grassroots people to get the state legislatures to adopt this act as their state's Conservation Easement Act. So this is not a federal act, this is a state level act.
Right.
When California got their hands on it, not only did they embrace this Conservation Easement Act, they actually wrote into their language that they expect that the justices, when proceeding forward on any lawsuit stemming from this Conservation Easement Act, that the justices will weigh with prejudice on the side of conservation in disfavor to the landowner. And that's written into your state's language that way. And the other thing that is the kicker, Colorado so far is the only state that's refused to do this, but there is this clause in this act called the Third Party Rights of Enforcement. And what this means is that if you have a Conservation Easement Act on your property, and I'm from New Jersey, and I think that you have, the landowner, has not held up to the terms and condition of the habitat, I can take you to court and sue you for not enforcing your habitat restrictions. That's what third-party rights of enforcement is all about, and California supports that also with vigor. Now, when it came to this habitat thing, when the states were taking stuff over, what people don't realize is that when they take it over, they're creating a nexus with the state. It's either a federal or a state nexus, depending on where the funding source comes from to purchase that land. What this means is that the government now has full-blown control over all the habitat and management restrictions. If let's say a land trust uses state or federal funding to purchase the conservation easement in any portion whatsoever, that also creates government nexus on private property, giving the government a backdoor way into controlling property without having to use eminent domain or condemnation. Why? Because the landowner gave it up voluntarily.
Exactly.
And therefore, they sidestep a whole lot of regulations.
And, you know, we hear a lot of folks saying, geez, you know, the state's going to come in. They're going to give me money to help me manage this land. It's going to be a great partnership. It's not a partnership. It's a takeover. And eventually, they'll have no say-so in the management of that property.
Hey, Rick, because one of the slides in your PowerPoint there is a quote from Dave Foreman, and it says, if we identify a ranch that's between two wilderness reserves and we feel it will be necessary as a corridor, we can say to the rancher, we don't want you to give up your ranch now, but let's put a conservation easement on it. Let's work out the tax details so you can donate in your will to this reserve system. And you have that listed as Dave Foreman from Listening to the Land by Sierra Club Books. When was that?
This would have been back in the 90s.
Okay,
that's what
I figured.
When everyone was trying to understand what the Wildlands Project was about, because Reed Moss and Dave Foreman put this whole thing together, that was back when they were trying to explain to everybody the concepts behind the structures on how they're going to adapt existing law practices with the land, readopt them, repurpose them for the outcome of this Wildlands Project. Now, what's interesting is that this is exactly how Reed Moss explained to the United Nations the whole Wildlands Project, because they wanted to expand this to a global type of a thing. And so through Reed Moss's work, based off of this theology core concept here as to how they're going to apply land laws. They turn around and made the wildlands the heart of the IPCC project and all the biosphere projects at the UN level. So this is where Reed Moss came in. This also became part of BEC, the Border Environmental Economic Cooperation or Conserve, whatever that thing was called when they imposed that on that range on our borders. It became part of the biosphere projects that came out of Rio de Janeiro and everywhere else. Now, what's even more interesting is all of these concepts as the mechanism on how they get people to join in on this thing. And in the case of California, it has evolved to the point that the Wildlands Project is now at the heart of Caltrans. I was researching this, and just a couple of months ago, I uncovered the Caltrans, it's called the Essential Habitat Connectivity Project. And in there, I have copied their map straight from their literature. And the replacement slide I sent has the correct addresses and things on there. I don't know if it's made it up to the web yet or not, but it's coming. Anyhow, there's three websites in there where you can go and anyone can research this stuff. What's interesting is that if you go into that book and research who is on the peer review of scientists on the board for this Caltrans project, you will find none other than Reed Moss. One of the key authors to the Wildlands Project is also one of the key peer review scientists for this Caltrans Essential Habitat Connectivity project.
Gosh, I feel so much better. At least it's being, you know, promoted by, you know, qualified people who have our best interest at heart.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
And the other thing it's a problem is that once these lands, going back to the habitat imposition you were referring to earlier, once the government has taken control and they are able to impose habitat restrictions on these lands where they can no longer grow the rice, they can also impose a habitat buffer on adjacent lands up to 10% the distance from the boundary as a buffer corridor, especially if the water comes off of the upstream lands onto the habitat-protected lands, they can impose greater restrictions on the upstream watersheds. And so this is why also a lot of conservation easements and key control points will be at the bottom of the watershed at the water outlet. And so there they can turn around and impose watershed restrictions further up the habitat on that issue. So once you've got the camel's nose in the tent, the camel comes in and kind of messes it up for everybody. And a lot of folks don't understand that long-term implication.
No, I don't think they do either. And a lot of those people, unfortunately, own some of this land. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to come back. We have Rich Marshall trapped on hold. He has a question for you or a comment. And we'll do all that somehow magically in the next 10 minutes. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. I should have left a long time ago. Who needs you? I've got Mexico.
Hey, let's come back with Rich Marshall, who's been patiently on hold. Mr. Marshall?
Yes, Aaron.
What have you got for us?
Well, I want to add, flesh out a little bit of that comment that's happening there that you're having about the conservation easements, which is an active element now in Siskiyou County. We've had a number of ranchers now with several thousands of acres that have been acquired up there with a conservation easement. One of the things I noted, I just attended a meeting in San Francisco where I was listening to people talk about the clean water bonds coming up, but I also noted in the previous ones that money is funneled from there into what they call habitat restoration, only that's just a euphemism for this ranch acquisition process. So you may want to add, Rick and Bill, to your information the following, that within the language of these clean water bonds, there is opportunity for California Fish and Game to basically bankroll money, which they then use to feed the Nature Conservancy as the frontline activity in acquiring these conservation easements. And then they come in the back door, the Fish and Game comes in the back door, and basically owns the land at the end of a five-year period. So that basically they are working undercover with taxpayer money to acquire these ranches under the guise of this conservation easement.
Hit it, Rick.
Well, that goes back to underscoring what I was saying about this nexus that
yes.
is created by using state and federal monies. That totally goes and underscores what I was trying to explain earlier, is how they use these land trusts and these environment groups as the front agency to come in and take control of the land without having to use eminent domain or any of those other legal structures under the 5th and 14th Amendments of our Constitution.
And for those people that think that, well, I don't know, they might be making all this up, go to the website, click on the PowerPoint here, and I don't know which slide it is, but you'll see it. It says Caltrans Wildland Project Goals, and you know, brought to you by the California Department of Transportation, California Department of Fish and Game, commissioned by the California Essential Habitat Connectivity Project, because a functional network of connected wildlands is essential to the continued support of California's diverse natural communities in the face of human development and climate change. Oh, let's just all admit it. We're all haters. And if you look at that map, it is literally the green version of the maps just prior, the wildlands maps that are red and yellow. These are green and white. Same map, same program. And the land they want to tie up just happens to exactly match, say, the frog and toad listing down in the Central Valley on the eastern side of California. It's the same footprint.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that where Richard's at up there in Siskiyou County?
That is. There. Yes, Doug.
Yeah, that. You've got another situation going on. They've recently been dealing with some very aggressive environment groups to shut down all land uses, and it started with the dredging. They shut out the gold dredgers, and now they've got this, they're trying to shut down the irrigators using the status of a fish, the coho salmon.
Coho salmon, right.
Yeah, and they're trying to shut down their upstream spawning habitats to irrigation. Yet, at the same time, the very people that are promoting through litigation and other venues to shut down these resource users and economists, they're changing it for the economy of the marijuana production, because there was just a recent report up by the state biologist, I think last February, where it said they determined that the amount of water being illegally pulled from these spawning habitats that is going to these illegal marijuana farms is draining the rivers dry. And so here on one hand,
that's right,
they want to stop the resource economy of mining production and farming, and yet they want to turn around and use it to grow an illegal crop, a federally illegal crop, and they're using it by illegally diverting water. It doesn't even belong to them.
That's correct. So that's been happening actually for some time, I believe, but it just got reported. We also believe, many of us believe, that the reason all these forests have become off limits is also tied into this affiliation with marijuana growing, which takes place to a large degree in these Native American reservations up in these areas where the security is provided by the Native American groups.
Well, fellas, we've got a lot to talk about. Can we pick this up next week? We're going to add a little Dr. Kaufman to the balance of the 2 hours here, and then we're going to come back with Rick Frost, I'm sure. Rich, you've got other things to add from up in your area, and we'll be using roughly the same slides. We'll go through those some more next week. Fellas, it's been awesome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Aaron.
We'll keep going. We'll get Dr. Kaufman's take on the EPA, and we'll be back with you guys next week, bright and early, 8 o'clock next Sunday morning here at We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, boys. We'll be back in a couple of minutes after the news. You've joined KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding. You are joining We the People Radio for the second half. First half was fun and frivolity with a little conservation easement thrown
in. That's right. Very informative. Very informative.
Just to bring you down. We don't get all excited. And if you were listening to the news here on the break, gosh, couldn't have timed it better. The Center for Biological Diversity. Love those guys,
here
man.
Here comes.
Yeah, they want us to have grizzly bears now.
Now we got the wolves in. Now.
Got the wolves. Now we got to move right to grizzly bears.
Grizzly bears are next. We want to, you know, I want to see a grizzly bear in my backyard.
You know what? You know what I'm after? I'm after mastodons. I think we've got to move to mastodons, pterodactyls. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we need that.
Yep.
I tell you what.
We're all God's creatures.
Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Exactly. We're going to have to change the. Have to change the name of the show to.
Well, you know, if we're not living there,
the universe gone wild.
What's the point? I mean, if we're not living there, the animals need to live. Let's
that's true.
Back.
As long as we're going to be locked out of it, what the heck?
Yeah.
Nobody will get hurt.
We the people of Jurassic Park.
Exactly. Hey, did you call Dr. Kaufman yet, Bob?
No, but I
could. Could you do that?
Do that
I was going to say we have Dr. Kaufman with us, but we don't because we have to actually call him. So yeah, as soon
stand
as
by.
Stand by.
One moment, please.
While we give him a one ringy dingy, two ringy dingy. Who was that anyway?
That was Lily Tomlin.
That's what I thought.
Is Ernestine.
Right. I love her.
Have I reached the party to whom I am speaking?
The party to whom I am speaking. All right. So if you've reached the party to whom you're speaking, you're on KCNR 1460 AM. You have reached We the People Radio. We're goofing off while we get our next guest online. You can reach us by phone at 530-605-4567.
Yeah, if you think that grizzly bear idea is a great idea, call in. Let us know. I think,
call in and give us your address. We'll come on. Sorry. Don't tempt me. Don't tempt me today. I already look like I've been in a fight.
I didn't do it.
You so did it.
So, I didn't do it.
I have to lie and say the dog bit me in the face so it can explain this gigantic puffy nose and the black eyes.
We're resetting the dog bite.
You're resetting the dog bite? The emergency room people were like, oh. So
I think your eyes are more shut now than they were the first hour.
Yeah, because they hurt more. You know, when you wake up and your pain medication is still sort of there, it's not there now. There's no there now, as they say in Congress. There's no there. No, so,
what's the meaning of there?
How'd we do?
You're funnier when you're on your pain medication. Right. I don't know why you didn't take it this morning.
Usually I don't make any sense. That's usually part of the drawback there.
Oh, yeah, I've been yucking it up for 2 days, Bob, let me tell you.
Well, perhaps Dr. Kaufman can write you a prescription.
Dr. Kaufman, bring some semblance of order. So let's see. Dr. Michael Kaufman, I'm going to just go with his bio right here that my squinty little eyes can read. He received his bachelor's in forestry and his master's in biology at Northern Arizona University and his PhD in forest science at the University of Idaho. This was all back a little while ago, and then he put that all to good use, did some homework, sneaked up on the environmentalists, and actually formed what we now know as the that yellow and red map.
That's right.
You made their yellow and red map, didn't you, Dr. Kaufman?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, see, we use that yellow and red map all the time, and especially out here in California with a K.
I'd like to add, too, that if you'd like to read some of Dr. Kaufman's material,
yes,
he's
please.
A frequent contributor to Range Magazine, my favorite magazine, or I thought I'd put that plug in
That's
there.
That's right.
That's right. You can catch him there. Very, very interesting articles.
The best magazine ever for regular people who have common sense. I guess
yes, it. Right. If you don't have common sense, you won't like it.
Yeah, you will not like it a bit.
You just won't get it.
Yeah, you just won't get it. It's right.
And if you're probably not, call you names.
Yeah, and if your relatives are telling you you're liberal and you're like, no, I'm not, read the magazine. If you don't get it, then you are. Your relatives are right. You have been working on all sorts of stuff, and we have all his books. Well, I don't know if we have all of them, but we have a lot of them. Listed and linked on our site. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you will find information about Dr. Kaufman. And your website, I think that's one thing we need to add. I haven't been able to actually see the website for a few days, so I'm sorry my review has been a little bit limited. Dr. Kaufman, give us your website. I know it.
My primary website, I have one for my business, but my primary website that most people would be interested in is AmericaPlundered.com.
There we go.
AmericaPlundered.com. And on that website, on the op-eds, we have a whole host of things that I have written. We have new daily, basically daily, not always, but basically daily updates on what is happening that most people will not be aware of if they just depend upon the liberal press and so forth. And keeping you up to date as to some of the key things that are happening around the world that affect us in a very negative way. So, as well as my books and so forth. So it's an informative site.
We are just really grateful to have you jump on with us. We haven't talked to you for a while. And, boy, since we've spoken, California's chosen to list wolves and go crazy with endangered species and all sorts of things. So I see that you're... what we have listed on the site for your newest book is Radical Islam in the House. And it used to be Radical Islam at the Door, but at the door is crossed out. And now it says
right.
In the House. The subtitle is The Plan to Take America for the Global Islamic State.
Boy, are we seeing that today?
Oh, my gosh.
You know, we wrote that last year, and some of the things we forecast are actually happening today around in the Middle East. And it is stunning the danger that we're in right now because of the pro-Islamic nature of our president. I can't say that he is basically a Muslim, but he is so supportive of Islam that he is totally blind to what he is doing and setting us up for utter failure when it comes to the actual Islamic, especially the radical or jihadist Islam that is spreading worldwide now. And I just, why people cannot see that, he has basically infected our entire government decision making and everything else with Islamists, and nothing's good is going to come out of this. One of the things with progressives, and I talk about this in the book Plundered, one of the things about progressives is that they believe that most people do wrong things because we have the wrong government. That if we just,
had the right government, we'd be better.
Yeah, if we just had the right government and the people were treated right the way they think they should be treated right, then people would not do wrong things. I'm sorry, folks, that totally ignores human nature and the whole premise of sin and so forth that is laid out biblically. And as a result of that, when you start to look at, say, Islam or Muslims around the world and say, well, if the United States was not so horrible to Islamists and Muslims and so forth, they would do the right things. No, they will never do the right things because their Quran basically says that you and I are heathen, and if we basically do not accept Islam, we're going to die. That's the fundamental. Now, there's a lot of Muslims that don't believe that, obviously, and we need to take that into consideration. But as far as the leadership of this Islamic leadership is concerned, we have to be conquered one way or the other, and we're seeing that now.
Yeah, I think we are seeing it, and we're catching it everywhere. Now, have you connected that to all the things you've been following for all these years?
there's a relationship, and for a long time I didn't understand the relationship between the progressive movement in the United States and the socialist movement in Europe. They're one and the same, but they call them different names. And the Islamic movement, I never could figure out why the progressives with their pro-women's lib and so forth were supporting the Islamists who put women down, you know. And if you look at it carefully, what you will find is that they all have the roots in what I call evil. Now, you may not believe this, but nonetheless, I think there is evil in the world.
No, we're good with evil.
Pardon?
Yeah, we get evil.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of evil,
evil
out there. And they're both related to evil, and because of that connection to evil, if you want to call it Satan or whatever, that's fine, but it's evil in this raw form, because that is the basis of all lies. Both the progressives and the Islamists lie, and they live in a false world. They are in a delusional state, both of them, for the most part. You know, I'm not going to say that every person that who claims is to be a progressive does that, but at the same time, you see this predisposition to do things and believe in things that are not real. And they even noticed that, psychiatrists noticed that back over 100 years ago in some of the first books that were written on psychiatry. What was happening then to bring socialism into Europe, these psychiatrists were just saying, where are these people coming from? They have no connection to reality. Well, we're seeing exactly the same thing happening today. There's no connection to reality. And they live in their own little world. And because they believe that they're right and everyone else is wrong, and because they're in positions of power, they are forcing this on the rest of this country as well as around the world. And it's resulting in catastrophe, chaos. And yet we cannot seem to see that because we live in a delusional world. I don't understand how people cannot see this with our current administration, but nonetheless they can't.
Yeah, well, I think they can. I think they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that they don't, you know, they won't admit it. But I think there are a lot of people. It's interesting, you know, my litmus test is always my mom. And because she, you know, she doesn't really follow the news all that closely. And what she gets out of the Bay Area. So she gets a really tainted news. So I'm always kind of curious, you know, where she is on things. And I was talking to her yesterday, and I made a comment. She's not one to engage on political issues, you know, usually.
Yeah. You know, I have found that in families.
You know, I mean, the rest of our family, we had a regular, you know, anti-global. We had a big, I guess, you know, the liberals would call it a hate fest with my dad the weekend before, you know, so we just talked crap about the government for like 3 days. It was great. And so then, you know, I called my mom and I said, well, you know, with all the stuff that they're doing, you know, the IRS and this and that, and I rattled off all those things. And usually my mom will jump in and say, oh, honey, you know, you worry too much, or it's not that bad, or she'll make a comment like that. And she said, I know. And I thought, holy crap, my mom knows. They're almost done. I mean, if my mom could figure it out, they've lost their force field.
Well, you know, it seems to be that's the case, and I'm hoping it continues. It almost seems spiritual in nature that Obama keeps doing things that just put him in a very bad position. Everything that's going on, all the crises, all of the scandals and so forth that have come out this year, you got to shake your head and say, can't he see that what he's doing, like releasing those five major Islamists from Iraq? Yes.
Yeah.
Would not go down well for the American people? What made him think that the release of this prisoner of war, which was not true, he wasn't a prisoner of war. He walked off the base. He's a traitor. Nonetheless, the fact is, what made him think that the people would accept that? I mean, it's like he's just totally blind to what's going on. And more of that is happening with the IRS and everything else. They say one thing, and then the next day a report comes out that a new email or something else shows that he's lying. It's just unbelievable how this is happening, and yet he still has 41% of the American people that think he's doing a good job. You know, it's just, where are these people? They're in a state of delusion. It's the only thing that I can say, is that they're in a state of delusion. Now, part of that, of course, is because they're like your mom. They don't listen to the news. If they do, they watch CBS or NBC or something, where they get a very, very distorted viewpoint of what's going on in the world. And because of that, don't think there's anything wrong. Now, I understand that, but still, after a while, you begin to realize, you know, there's something terribly wrong here, and you start dropping your support for the group of people, which is, in this case, the Obama administration, that is perpetrating this on the American people. We're in a world hurt, so much so that we could have an economic collapse at almost any time now. We have written a series of articles about 8 months ago on the global financial debt spiral. It's again on my website, America Plundered, under op-eds. And it is, if you read that, you really get a sense that we are in a very precarious situation economically in this country. And it could, I hope it doesn't. But I at this point, I don't know that there's any way we can get out of at least some pain when we go into probably a recession or depression that's going to be worse than the 2008.
Yeah, well, you just keep hoping that with all the moving parts that are moving, that there are some moving the right direction.
Yes.
You know.
And I think there are. And I'm in some ways encouraged by the fact that a lot of people who supported Obama during the 2012 election are now against him because they see all of these things happening. They are starting to wake up. And the problem is that if all they read is the mainstream press, which is primarily controlled by progressive ideology, then they're not going to really see enough, fast enough, to help us to really avoid some of the major crises that could be coming down the road. But they are waking up, and that's a good sign.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You even have your tried and true believers, you know, when you get down to things like the NSA, and you start locking them off their own land, then all of a sudden it's like, hey, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Kind of amazing. It has to come home to roost for people. We need to take a really quick break, couple of minutes. We'll be right back with Dr. Michael Kaufman. Hope you join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. There are a lot of links there. All of Dr. Kaufman's op-eds are linked, and that is some good reading. Be right back with you. We have returned with Dr. Michael Kaufman this morning here on We the People Radio. Dr. Kaufman, you have been writing all sorts of things about the EPA, and that has been very much on everyone's mind of late. Without reading your article from Range Magazine, which we can't do because we gave it away to my dad, tell people what you've I don't know if discovered is the right word, but how's that?
Well, the EPA is headed by zealots. Gina McCarthy, who is the new head of the EPA, is one of the great. I thought that the previous administrator of the EPA was bad, but Gina McCarthy is 10 times worse. As far as she says, if Congress doesn't do what we know and needs to be done, we'll do it anyway. And this is her attitude on everything. And understand that many people, including, I believe, I can't say this because I don't have the evidence for it, that many people in the EPA basically have a pantheistic viewpoint. What a pantheistic viewpoint is that nature is God, and that anything that we do that hurts nature should be stopped. That's what Agenda 21 is all about, from the United Nations. And what we're implementing by the federal government throughout the United States right now is this desire to protect nature from mankind. It used to be that our federal agencies basically are there to help farmers and other people to do a better job on the land or whatever their responsibility was. But they were, their job was to assist them because the people are the primary sovereign of this nation. Well, that's not true anymore, not with Agenda 21. It started to happen even before Clinton's administration, that the EPA and others begin to change their viewpoint to the fact that they, and I actually talk about it in my series on the Bundy issue that's in the op-ed section of my America Plundered. On the very last one, I talk about what is called conservation biology. That started to creep into our university systems in the 1970s, became very dominant in the 1980s. Now, what is conservation biology? You'll have to read my articles to get it, because I'm not going to go all the way through it. But it's the belief that nature must come first at all costs. The principle of the Endangered Species Act is based on that, and as a consequence, the whole purpose of the Endangered Species Act was never designed to protect species. It was never designed. If you actually talk to the original authors of the Endangered Species Act, that wasn't their purpose. Their purpose was to stop people from doing the types of things that they believed is harmful to nature and to species and so forth. And as a consequence, the Endangered Species Act was written in a way that the species themselves have more rights than you and I. And their rights always supersede our rights. So in the case of Bundy, in, I think you know who I'm talking about, Cliven Bundy, the rancher in
sure.
southern Nevada, who made television news pretty consistently for 2 weeks back in April. But nonetheless, what happened with Bundy and all the ranchers in the Western United States, including those in Northern California, all of those basically are under the authority of the Endangered Species Act. And what the EPA has done is use that as a hammer to stop people, to stop ranchers from doing what would otherwise be considered normal ranching, normal agriculture, normal whatever it would be, that is not dangerous, that is not damaging to the environment. But because they have the Endangered Species Act, they can literally translate a recovery plan for those species that eliminate ranching and farming. And Bundy and his associates, the previous ranchers that are no longer there, faced was with the desert tortoise. Now, most people understand that the desert tortoise out there might be losing numbers and so forth. But did you know that research has been done, and it was clearly shown back in the early 1990s, so the recovery plan was based on bogus science. Back in the early 1990s, it was proven, without a shadow of a doubt, that the desert tortoise actually flourished. The more cattle that were on the range, the more desert tortoises there were. Why? Because the desert tortoise has a very inefficient digestive system. And as a consequence, they can't chew up and masticate their food as well as they should. But when the cattle do that and then defecate, the dung that's out there is the perfect food for the desert tortoise. And the more cattle, the more food, the more tortoises. Simple as that. And they have basically come with a recovery plan that basically says that what we're seeing here is that the cattle are destroying the tortoise. It could not be further from the truth. Literally cannot be further from the truth. Everything is upside down, just like it was up in Klamath with the salmon and so forth. Everything is turned upside down with this endangered species, and the whole recovery plan is a lie, and it's a lie based because they want to shut down agriculture and farming and ranching and so forth. It's just beyond belief how they can be so bold as to come out there and say that cattle are causing the decline in desert tortoises, when in fact the research, the original research, now not the so-called recent research, almost any research that the EPA does at this particular point in time is pseudoscience. It's done to come out with a particular conclusion. The whole research project is designed to show that cattle are destroying the desert tortoises, and it's, if it's not desert tortoises, something else.
It'll be anything else.
Now the chicken, prairie chicken, or whatever is out there. The prairie chicken is not caused by cattle. That's not caused by. They showed that 20 years ago. All of this stuff that's coming out right now is basically wrong, totally and absolutely wrong. Now, what they're doing now is extending that same principle to other activities. In other words, we need to shut down the economic engine of the United States. So how do you go about doing that? Basically, the economic engine depends upon cheap energy. So all you have to do is basically claim that global warming is causing the destruction of planet Earth and that we're going to destroy not only us, but the Earth along with it because of our fossil fuel emissions and so forth. So that's the premise that took back in the 1980s. And folks, it is solidly not true. I am a climate scientist. I have a minor in climatology and a major in ecosystem management. So what we have is a situation where the whole issue of climatology is based on a myth that has been put out there, forced out there in the mainstream media by the government and so forth. None of what you're hearing in the mainstream media is true. None. There is no evidence whatsoever. As a scientist, I'm saying this. There is no evidence, no empirical evidence whatsoever that man is causing global warming. Now, we can have an effect on it, just like we can have effect on a lot of things, but as far as the major part of global warming that's so dangerous, they say, none. There is no evidence to suggest that. None whatsoever. Now, if you think because we have retreating glaciers or melting ice caps, that's evidence of man-caused global, it's not. It basically says we're having warming, but it doesn't say how it's happening. None of what they put out there as evidence suggests how it's happening. It's just happening. And every bit of evidence out there, and there are literally hundreds of research articles that are not found in the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change assessment that they just issued last year and this year. None of it's found in there. None of the contrary evidence is found in these documents. This recent national climate assessment that was released by the Obama administration, I would estimate, and I don't know, but I've gone through that, and I would estimate there's probably not more than 5 or 10% of that entire document, 300-page document, that is even close to the truth. Most of it is raw propaganda, raw pseudoscience, are just totally bad science altogether. It is beyond belief, but they're using that politically to justify the need for capping CO2 emissions, and when they cap CO2 emissions and they have the control of the system that does that, they control our economy, our entire economy. You think Obamacare is bad? Wait till they actually control the amount of CO2 emissions, and we will be hamstrung, literally hamstrung, because our economy totally depends upon cheap energy. And then to make matters worse, they're trying to force this alternative green energy on us. And the alternative green energy cannot work. Literally cannot work. Oh, yeah, you can get 10 or 15%, maybe even 20%. There are places in Europe that claim they're 20%. I don't believe it, but nonetheless, they claim that. And what's happening in Europe? They've been at this a lot longer than we have.
They're backing
away from alternative green energy like it's the plague because it's destroying them. It doesn't work, and all of a sudden they're finding that people aren't having warmth in their houses when they have one of these windless periods in January when it's down below zero, that type of thing. And what is we cannot store energy, and as a consequence, alternative energy as we know it now. Now, maybe in the future we'll have the technology to store energy, but right now we don't. We're dependent upon what is actually produced at this moment for our power. And alternative energy is very, very erratic because the sun only shines 27% of the time and the wind only blows about 25% of the time. So the rest of the time, alternative energy doesn't work. And so you have to build tons more of the solar farms and the wind farms in order to cover those deficits when the sun isn't shining or the wind's not blowing. And Europe is finding it's killing them financially. It's destroying their industry. It's destroying their businesses. And they're backing out of it as fast as they possibly can. Now, not all of them. Now, it's interesting that socialism has been in Europe a lot longer than it has been here in the United States. And as a consequence, there is still at least half of the population in Europe that is adamantly sold on socialism or progressivism, as we call it here in this country. They cannot believe that alternative energy is not working. They can't accept it. They cannot make the connection to reality. Literally cannot make that connection to reality. And as a consequence, they're screaming that we cannot abandon this green energy lest we destroy the earth. But most, about half now, of the population of Europe is now ready to let go of alternative energy. They're building coal-fired plants like crazy in Germany and other countries now because they have to have a substitute for those that are closing. And so as a consequence, what are they achieving? They're going right back to what they had before in order to meet the needs of the people with coal-fired energy. Now, it's cleaner than the old coal-fired plants, no question about that, but it's still... And they refuse to do fracking. They absolutely refuse because they believe in the nutcases, environmental nutcases, that fracking causes tremendous environmental damage. I have not read a report. I've gotten into many scientific reports from MIT and others that have done studies on fracking. And, yeah, you can mess things up. But if it's done correctly, there is no environmental damage. None.
No,
other than to the settling ponds and so forth.
Well, and you know, Dr. Kaufman, I'm sure you've been following, because if I heard about it, I'm sure you have, since it's science, the ocean of water that they're finding, like 250 miles below the Earth's crust, 250
yes.
to 400 and some
right.
odd miles. Well, ultimately, when we want that water, we're going to need to figure out how to get there, too. So I'm, you know, someone had asked me, you'd be just the guy to ask. He said, hey, do you think the EPA knew about that and that was kind of a catalyst for their movement away from navigable waters to pretty much anything that isn't dry? I mean,
yeah,
how convenient they would control it.
I really think that there's two phases to that part. We haven't even got to the water issue yet.
Oh, wait, hold on. We have to take
to
a really...
the EPA's water issue. One of them, I think, is that they want to gain control over all the lands of the United States, every single acre.
Well, they're in the process of doing that right now. I mean, they're in the process of the biggest land grab in the history of the country.
Right.
And we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk.
Oh, sure. We're going to take a quick break, and now you don't know what to say.
Well, no, but I want to talk about this EPA land grab, because it is a huge thing, and you're just not hearing that much about it. But we're going to take a quick two-minute break. When we come back, let's jump on that. I really think people
need
to
know about
it. I want
to do the Islam thing, too. We need you on for a lot longer. Okay. Really fast break. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
$1.50 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
Oh my God, and now that song is true.
It is true. Hey, we are speaking to Dr. Kaufman about various
all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, various things. But what I want to hit on, I know it's impossible to hit it quickly, but the news reported very briefly and very quietly on what the EPA is up to, and I don't think it really got the attention that it needed. Tell us about what the EPA is up to and what we have to look forward to.
Ever since the Clean Air Act, or Clean Water Act, was passed back in the 70s, the EPA has been trying to expand its jurisdiction because the actual law states navigable waters. They have the jurisdiction over navigable waters. Well, that means it needs to float a boat. And that's not satisfactory for the EPA. They have a lust for power that's beyond anything I've ever seen before. And they want to be able to control every acre of every state in the Union. And the best way they can do that is to expand the definition of the Clean Water Act to include the mud puddles or temporary water someplace on somebody's land. Once that happens, then anything that that person needs to do, or the company or whatever the case might be, needs to do, has to get a permit or the permission by the Environmental Protection Agency. Can you imagine the magnitude of the bureaucracy that would have to be developed to do that?
And they're calling calling that surface water now, right?
They're calling that surface water. And what they're doing, basically, is that you have, technically speaking, they say they're not going to do this, and they say they're not going to have any effect on agriculture, but several things that have already happened show that they are. They will do every acre of every state and county in the United States. They want to be the sole authority to determine whether or not you can do something that you may need to do to, in order to stay in business. The same thing will happen to almost every landowner, homeowner, and so forth across the country. That's been happening to the ranchers in agricultural areas, especially in the western United States, over the last, 100 years, actually. And what we're going to see, if this continues, now they were supposed to do it actually 2 or 3 weeks ago. I can't remember exactly how long ago it was. They've had to postpone it because of the huge pushback by agriculture, by people, by farmers, by ranchers, and so forth on this provision. They still want to do it, and they're going to, as we've seen with almost everything else in the Obama administration, they will figure out a way to circumvent everybody else's concerns and do what they want to do. And once that happens, folks, I'm sorry, we are in a world of hurt because our property rights just vanished.
That's right, and once they control surface water, that's everything.
Well, it's not even okay, and for people who might be new to this topic, I always figure, okay, we've got a little bit of everybody listening. So if people think, well, you know, somebody should regulate surface water, we want, you know, you're kind of sucked in by the idea that, you know, the Clean Water Act is really about clean water. Surface water means any indentation in the ground where if you spit, it might stay there for longer than a half a second.
Yeah, right. Anything that puddles for any length of time could come under the jurisdiction. Now, I'm not going to say it will, because there's a lot of latitude in the way that they want to develop this regulation, but I can see that they're developing the regulation to give them this kind of authority eventually. And just like anything else that they do, that once the camel's nose is under the tent, they'll keep expanding and expanding and expanding their control over whatever issue is at stake. And this is horrifying. They have been trying to expand their jurisdiction for 40 years, and so far, because of Congress, and so they have not been able to do that. Congress has refused to do it, and we've had presidents, even President Clinton, acquiesced to the demands of Congress and that they not expand that definition. But that's not true with the Obama administration. It's not true with the progressives, because the progressive liberals in the Senate and so forth basically control the U.S. Congress. Now, we get these accusations that the Republicans keep stonewalling and they're the party of no and so forth. You better hope that they're party of no, because
these
progressives want to do is basically take all of your rights away and give them to some federal agency. In this case, we're talking about the EPA, but there are others. And the fact is that once that happens, we become a feudal system of government. Now, what do I mean by that? You remember back in the Dark Ages that the king and certain royalty had all the land rights, property rights. The common person could not own land. And what happened is that these royalties, the royalty and so forth, the dukes and all the rest, allowed the serfs and so forth to farm the land, produce food, and they would allocate out to the serfs a certain portion of the crop. The rest of it they would get, the royalty would get. This is what we're moving towards, folks. It's already been in place for over 100 years in the western United States because of the way the states were entered into statehood back in the 18th and 19th century and the 20th century. Because of the way they were done, they kept the federal land, and anybody that depends on that federal land is nothing more than a serf. to the federal government, who is controlled by outside interests. They're not controlled by the people that actually have to make a living. They're controlled by these zealot environmentalists. They're trying to demand that they do certain things certain ways.
Well, to put it in perspective, you know, if the federal government in any way has the right to come into your business, and I don't care if you're a radio station or a department store or whatever, if they have the right to come in and say, hey, we don't like the way the water's running out of your parking lot, and it's taking away and depositing something in the water, and they can come in on the federal side and shut you down because of that, we're all going to be living in little...
Well, there's a guy. I mean, let's go with real examples. There's a guy. He bought some farmland. It was dry land wheat property that had been farmed for many, many years in the past. He buys it. He plants a wheat crop in the winter when, you know, you don't have to water it. And the Army Corps came in, and actually he harvested in March. He sold the property in November. And the following January, he received a letter from the Army Corps of Engineers saying that he was to cease and desist his farming operation, which obviously he didn't own the property anymore, and that they were going to pursue charges against him and or imprisonment. Imprisonment was actually on there because he disturbed some sort of wetland, although it wasn't a wetland. It had always been wheat property.
Well, they're circumventing the state's ability to.
They said there was a little ditch in the middle, you know, a little indentation, and that by disturbing that, he somehow disrupted the. I don't know. Something.
You know, it's very interesting. That's a very good case. I hadn't heard about it before, but it's a very good case to show the listening audience the danger of what's behind here, because the Clean Water Act does not allow the EPA or the Army Corps of Engineers or any of the federal agencies that oversee it the right to make those kinds of claims against any agricultural use, especially if it's been in continuous use. Now, I don't know if this plot of land has been in continuous agriculture or not. I mean, that is something we don't know. But at the same time, they do not have that right. And for them to come in, they have no legal right, no legislative right whatsoever to do that. But for them to come in and basically say that he was modifying a wetland and therefore held in contempt and open to all of these charges and so forth, they can't do it according to the law. And yet they do. They do that on a common basis across the land. They basically assume authority they were never given by the Clean Air Act or Clean Water Act.
And the state has no power to stop that.
And the state has no power. Now, the question is, you know, you said earlier that our water should be regulated. Well, that's been a state responsibility right from the very beginning.
Exactly.
And the states have done a fine job. Now, sometimes they're a little overbearing. Sometimes they probably don't do it enough. But at the same time, it's already been handled. And the key part here is that there is a group of people, especially in the western United States, there is a group of people in the east that want to control all of the land in the west. And they've been wanting to do this since the early 1900s or even late 1800s. And basically, they have leveled several efforts, I mean, major efforts. They're well-funded and so forth to basically claim all of the land in the western United States.
Yeah, and by doing that, that just bleeds out on so much other stuff. And unless you have a fortune and or an environmental attorney in your pocket, which will take a fortune, you can't fight these guys.
No.
They've got more money and more control.
And this really makes the Endangered Species Act a minor issue. I mean, if they're going to control the water at that level, we don't have any rights left.
I think we lost Dr. Kaufman. He got really quiet all of a sudden.
Uh-oh. I think we did.
All right, we'll get him back momentarily.
There wasn't even a click. There wasn't even so much as a click.
No.
Dial,
well,
Bob, dial.
I think the last thing
we only
need
have a couple
is,
minutes
is,
left.
Is
there
to
are
have
pals who are monitoring the show.
Okay, here we go.
Dial.
I think the last thing we need is to have the federal government stepping in and, you know, I thought we had a Tenth Amendment, but stepping in and basically taking over the responsibilities of the states.
Well, and so when people go to their assemblyman, their senator, their congressman for help on stuff like that, you wind up in the gigantic web of bureaucracy that then starts headed toward the courts, and we kind of know where the courts have been. You know, they've been backing these folks up.
If you have to take your grievance to the federal government, I mean, it's bad enough that we don't have any state representation, but on a federal level, we certainly aren't going to be represented in that arena. And to have a case heard on that level will be years and years and years. And in the meantime, you're living in a rabbit hutch.
Yeah.
I mean, you're done.
You have now been relegated to the rabbit hutch.
And we all know that every one of these three-letter agencies all have their own SWAT teams. So don't think you're going to, you know, pull anything over on them, because they'll...
Some are four.
Well, some
Forest
are four.
Service, because they have fake law enforcement, too.
Yeah, they do have fake law enforcement.
Yeah.
And,
it always
and that,
irritates
that opens
me.
Up a whole other can of worms. But, yeah, we aren't going to be in very good shape if this is allowed to continue. So,
well, during the bizarre forced break that we have since Dr. Kaufman got zipped out here just 5 minutes before the top of the hour, here he said he could only be on with us for an hour, and he cheated us out of 5 minutes.
I'm
he owes us a full hour for this 5 minutes.
No, you can't hang up on us.
No, he just, I think he... Did you hear it, though?
It got quiet.
Of a sudden got super quiet.
I'm
I was like,
call him all day today and just hang up on him. Over and over and over.
Oh,
like
my gosh.
It's like that Jackass joke.
We should read that one day.
Yeah, we should.
When we have a lot of extra time. Okay, so I'm going to put a little plug in here for Dr. Kaufman so that people will go read his stuff. Dr. Kaufman is currently the president of Environmental Perspectives Incorporated, EPI, and executive director of Sovereignty International. Dr. Kaufman played a key role in stopping the ratification of the Convention on Biological Diversity, which is the biodiversity treaty you guys hear about all the time, back in the early 90s. Newest book is Radical Islam. Radical Islam at the Door. And at the door has been crossed out, replaced with in the house.
In the house.
So even though we're talking about EPA and stuff like that, he's got books on that too. So I hope you hit the webpage and read about that. Dr. Kaufman, have you returned from the great silence?
I am. I'm back.
All of a sudden it got real quiet. We're like, oh.
Yeah, it got real quiet for me too, and I wasn't sure what was happening.
He cheated us out of 2 minutes. He owes us at least another hour.
I take back what I said about you.
I know. But I think the discussion at least opens up the door for the realization that we're in a world of hurt. And in a position where if we do not take back our nation in this next election and put in people who are not progressives into Congress and the Senate and so forth, we are going to lose this nation as we have historically known it. Now, it's still going to be called the United States and so forth, but we are already seeing a loss of about 10% of our standard of living because of what the progressives have done so far. And it's only going to get worse if we allow them to continue to develop policy for the United States. Now, we want to protect the environment. I don't think anybody wants us to destroy the environment. But there are ways that that can be done without destroying our economy at the same time. These people have a hatred for capitalism and so forth, that they want to destroy capitalism, and that's the only form of economy that is going to basically lift people out of poverty and do everything else that we need to do. And as a result, if they get into power and stay in power in the 2014 elections, I don't know that we can survive another 2 years of this.
Well, they're not stupid. They've figured out a way to circumvent everything by going through environmental law, endangered species law, and just keeping everybody tied up in those arenas, we're going to be doomed.
Bill.
So get involved. If you're in the listening audience, get involved locally with a group that is trying to overcome certain aspects of whatever this might be in your area.
And get informed, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
If you head to wethepeopleradio.us, you'll get all the information on both of our guests this morning, Rick Frost and Dr. Michael Kaufman, and along with all their op-eds and PowerPoints and all that stuff, you'll be all plugged in.
And we're out of time.
Thanks, Dr. Kaufman. We appreciate
you
it.
Bet.
We're looking forward to having you on again.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye. All right, fellers, next week we have Rick Frost on. We're talking more about environmentalness. We're going to kind of get down into some specific examples, too. So for those of you that are like, stop talking generalities, we're going to do that next week.
All here on KCNR, Shasta Redding.